Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hello and welcome to another Invest with Clarity podcast. I'm your host, Matt Halloran. I got Chuck with me again, and of course, Mr. Mark Pearson. Now, we are going to continue this conversation, process before progress, and we've really been deconstructing this. If you've been paying attention to this kind of mini series that we've been diving into, this really shows what investing with clarity truly means for you as a client, and we're going to take it underneath another level today. Pretty soon, we are going to be skimming the Earth's core with the level of depth that we're going here, which is going to be a whole bunch of fun. So, Chuck, I'm going to turn it right over to you, my friend.
Hey, Matt, thanks again. Always great to be with you. And Mark, thanks for having me here. We were talking about this particular component of what we do at Nepsis and how important it is. Let's do a deeper dive into this. And I'm one of these guys that I'd love to get back to the basics here. So, of course, we all know what a process is just in life, right? I thought, well, I'm not going to just take that for granted for our audience. So what I did is I looked it up on, of course, the internet. And here's what it says: a series of actions or steps taken in order to achieve a particular end, right? And if you strip that sentence out, you think about how important it is. And I want really Mark to unpack this: a series of actions or steps to achieve a particular end. So the problem, and I'm going to pass the torch to Mark here, is that we want progress before we even have a process, especially with our money, right? Everyone wants to have the five-star fund. They want to beat the market. That's not a process, and that doesn't lead to progress. So, Mark, take it from there, my friend. I'd love you to unpack that if you could.
Yeah, that's a great setup. Of course, one of the things I talk a lot to our advisors about or our clients about is this idea that when they come over, one of the things they want to ask is, well, what are your historical returns? You know, how well have your portfolios done? Are your clients beating the market? And so when they say those kinds of things, I always say to them three very important things. Number one, we don't benchmark to a market because I don't even know what that means. In other words, to say a market is where you go to buy things. It's like a vegetable market, a meat market, a flea market. Stock market is the same thing. What is the market? It is a place where you go to buy companies you want to own. So when people talk about beating the market, that's too general in nature, but that's how investors have been trained, right? Exactly. So that's an incorrect question. And the second thing I always say is, why are you asking what historical returns are? Returns are historical. You know, Pearl Harbor got bombed, and that was historical.
So it was.
You think Pearl Harbor will get bombed again? I don't know, but it doesn't really matter, does it? You don't know. Here's what you do know. What happens in history is historical in nature.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen again in the future. And so what we really try to focus on with the investor is to get them out of the marketing mindset, the industry mindset of the world, which in my opinion is really designed to give you a lack of clarity, because a lack of clarity causes confusion. When you have confusion, what is the necessary psychological thing that people do? They freeze. They don't know what to do. They stay right where they're at. The other thing people do is when they're content, well, nothing's getting hurt. Nothing's bad. I can still pay my bills. I can still live. So why fix what's broken or what's not broken? The key is, it is the process that gives you the returns you get. The returns are what you're asking for, and you set it up perfectly, Chuck. The returns are the client saying, I want to know what the progress is.
Yes.
but you can't tell people what the progress is going to be without the diagnosis. The diagnosis of where you're at and how you're allocated.
I love what you just said, and I got so excited I was going to step in front of that, but I'm glad I let you finish. The word diagnosis, I was almost thinking about this because I've been on the other side of the table before. We were talking to a money manager, and I know the question should never be, what are your returns? Are you a growth or value? Do you own US or international? It's all relevant. What I want to know, and here's what I'd like you to say, it's almost like a heart surgeon being a patient and allowing another cardiologist, right, to do their surgery. You'd want to know the process, almost what are, and I know what they are, but I want you to tell our audience here, the set of rules, let's talk about it, that allow you to make selections in the portfolio. So we have this by discipline, talk about some of the things that you look at in that process. And then we're going to switch that after to get to the cell discipline. But I would want to know what the rules are that you've defined in your process and how you go about selecting companies.
Oh, man.
Without giving away the secret sauce, of course.
Well, I mean, do you have 2 hours?
Yeah.
Well, the first thing I would say is this. When you go to the doctor, so let's break this down simply. You go to the doctor, and the doctor says you have high cholesterol. I've had high cholesterol. I'll be 57 this year. I've had high cholesterol since I was 20. And the doctor says you have high cholesterol. You should really be put on a cholesterol medicine like a Lipitor. Mm-hmm. I went and saw a cardiologist, you know, in 2020, shortly in the COVID, because at my age, one of my doctor buddies said, you know, you should get a baseline on your heart and see a cardiologist for the first time, let them get a baseline. And I had done several things prior to that. And so in their system, they had all this information. Just bear with me, go with me on this. This is all going to circle around and make sense. I've had high cholesterol since I was 20. My cholesterol now is 275. When I was in 2 years ago, I went and had a heart test to check out to see how blocked my arteries were, because I was concerned that at 55 years old, if I've had high cholesterol, my arteries got to be plugged, and I want to know how plugged they are so I can make sure that I don't have an issue. No one ever asked me how much I exercise. No one asked me how I ate. They did say, well, geez, your good cholesterol is really high. And the point of the story was, this cardiologist says, geez, with this high cholesterol, I suppose you don't want to go on Lipitor. In other words, he was already trying to treat what he thought was a problem tactically, not with a strategic solution. Gee, why do you have high cholesterol? No, you have high cholesterol. Let me put you on Lipitor. And then he said, but geez, you have really good cholesterol and your arteries are not plugged. So they did this quote unquote assessment. Love the assessment, statistical in nature. Let me do the assessment to see what the percentage opportunity is that you could have a heart attack by the age of 65. I said, sure, go ahead. So he runs the numbers, and this whole system kicks out this number about the statistical probability of me having a heart attack by age 65. Sorry to give everybody my health light, but that's okay. I'm fine with it. He says, yeah, that's what I thought. You have less than a 1% chance of a heart attack by the age of 65. And he says, but your cholesterol's high. He kept going back to a symptom, but he wasn't asking me how to fix the symptom. He was trying to give me a solution to the symptom without trying to figure out the problem. That is a critical piece of wisdom to the understanding of portfolio management. Financial advisors will go in and say, oh, gee, your portfolio is too risky. Oh, gee, you are overweight too much in this area. Oh, gee, you don't have enough money to retire on. Oh, gee, most importantly, man, your portfolio has underperformed for so long. you should do this. They want to give you a solution to the symptom. They don't want to give you a solution to the problem. And I believe that the fundamental problem in investing and the reason why people chase returns, get emotional about their portfolios, is because they don't have a solution to the problem. And that's where clarity comes in.
Boy, Mark, that was fantastic. And it just drove home, I think, the key point. You think about health, physical health, financial health, right? And, right. And they're tied together, the emotion of both of those. And even a trained cardiologist who's very good at what he does, it was so hard for him to get over that hump. And I think that's where our industry is. They focus on what is irrelevant, right? They try to classify money managers in a style box, right?
Right.
Or they suggest that you have too much in a certain area or sector.
Right.
And what I want to do is kind of rally back to this conviction part of the process, which I think is just so key in what I think you undertake exceptionally. So it's almost like your physician who got back, he had a conviction that the bottom line was, right, the percentage of risk that you are of having a heart attack, which was exceptionally low. Exactly. So talk about that conviction, your firmly held set of beliefs of looking at a business, what you want and what you're looking at today.
Right. Well, we have this new employee on board, and I've been having this conversation with the new employee about just teaching them the NEPSIS way, the process before progress, and all these different things that, you know, we're educating on. And one of the things that he experienced, because he went to a dinner with me the other night, was I sat with a gentleman and he says, you know, I would love to have you manage some of my money. You know, I've got this money over here that I think is super safe and it's conservative and it's all good, but I wouldn't mind, you know, having you manage this other portion because I can afford to take risk. And I said, well, what do you mean your portfolio is conservative? He couldn't answer it. I said, what do you define as risk? He couldn't answer it. I always say this, risk is relative, right?
Absolutely.
As is performance, quite frankly. I often say, I can give you my historical returns, but if I did, are they good? Are they bad? You can't answer that. You want to know why you can't answer it? Because you don't know the amount of risk that was taken to get the returns that we get. Risk is relative. Conservative is relative. Some may say, I have 100% of my money in an annuity. That's super conservative. Yeah, sure, until the annuity company goes belly up. That makes everything good, right?
So, exactly.
So conservative, aggressive, risk, they're all relative. So to get to your point about conviction is a function of the level of risk you are willing to take to achieve a certain rate of return. The conviction indicator that we use, our proprietary conviction process we use, will give me the indications of the amount of conviction, i.e. the amount I want to own of a particular business, and more importantly, what is the downside risk? What is the upside risk? And not only the downside risk to the upside risk, but how does that impact the rest of the overall portfolio? Remember, a portfolio is like a machine. It's like an automobile. You've got spark plugs. You've got filters. You've got brakes. You've got a radio. You've got all these things. And they all work together for one goal: to make the car drive and get you from point A to point B. Your portfolio is the same way. Every position that is owned in the portfolio is owned for a specific reason to accomplish a specific goal. No one company you own in that portfolio breaks the portfolio long-term. Every position is owned to accomplish a certain goal. I even put companies in the portfolio I actually think will go down in value. Well, why would you ever do that? Because on the other side of that, we're expecting other things to happen. They're going to bring up the upside. And it doesn't matter at the end of the day what an individual position does in the portfolio, i.e., it doesn't matter what any individual component of the car does. You just want to make sure that when you go in the car, press the button to start, the car is going to drive. in your portfolio, every business you own for whatever particular reason you own it is in there knowing that you expect that when you press the button to drive the portfolio, it's going to move forward. And that is the power of the conviction. That is the power of the process before you get progress. You see, returns are a result of something. Progress, good or bad, is the result of a process.
So
no one ever asks, what is your investment process? Which, of course, entails sell discipline and buy discipline. One more point, Chuck, and I'll be done. I often say to investors, and they say to me, how are your returns? How do you do against the market? What market? How do I do against the meat market? Vegetable market? Fruit market? What kind of market are you talking about? The stock market. Oh, the stock market. Well, what is the stock market? Well, that's it's where stocks are. Oh, you mean businesses, because that's what stock is, right?
Exactly.
Well, yeah. Okay. So what's your question again? Well, how do you do against the stock market? Is that like saying when you go to Target to buy fruits and vegetables, how well did you do versus going to the vegetable or fruit market? I'm just curious. I don't know. Just asking. I'm asking for
that's
a friend.
Great analogy.
So when people ask me, how do you do against the stock market? I say, you're asking me the wrong question. What do you mean asking me the wrong question? It's like going to the flea market and saying, how'd you do at the flea market? Well, I don't know. I mean, I bought this at a good price. I bought that at a good price. Okay, that's the stock market. I bought this at a good price. I bought that at a good price. Smart money. Have you ever noticed, Chuck? Smart money never talks about really the companies they own. And if they do talk about the companies they own, do they ever tell you when they buy them or when they sold them? Let me ask that question one more time.
Yep.
People who talk about the investments they own, do they ever talk about when they bought them or sold them?
No.
Of course they don't. That's the secret behind Warren Buffett, who still owns Coca-Cola, who still owns Wells Fargo. Process before progress.
Mark, that was beautiful. And I love the way you tied in Buffett. He's been asked about what risk is. And what he basically came back and says that over-diversification is simply a rationale that people have no idea of what they're doing. And then he went on to say, what I think risk is if I buy a company and I don't fully understand it, that's risk.
Right.
And our industry has just lost its way with that. And I want to ask you one more thing about that. It brought back, and hopefully you can remember this because you first told us that we met 15 plus years ago. You had a friend of yours ask you a question. He said, Mark, what do you think of P.F. Chang's? And your answer was, I think, oh, I love their Kung Pao chicken. And he said, no, I mean, what do you think about the company, the stock?
I do remember that.
And your answer was something like, I wouldn't touch a restaurant with a 10-foot. But again, it brings that back, right? You understand.
I forgot about that one. That's a great memory on your part. Well, that goes back to the philosophy and strategy, right, that we've talked about in other podcasts. Philosophically and strategically, we have a very set and
detailed set of beliefs.
Transparent set of beliefs and ideas about our philosophy and strategy. There are just certain businesses. I don't care if they look good. I'll tell you what, I think airlines look great right now. I'm not going to buy them. I just think owning an airline is not a good idea. So when you look at the sectors we own, you will find that we own very few sectors in our portfolio. We're diversified by sector, not by company. And then within the sectors, we pick the best of the best companies. But we're not going to own airlines. We're not going to own restaurants. And they may do well for a little bit. But I was showing someone a chart today of Visa because Visa just put out their earnings.
Blew it out by the water, right?
And I told the person, this is the day we bought it. And it was the day it went public.
Yeah.
And I don't even remember the price anymore. Now, post-split, I think it was $17 or something like that. And it's 14 years later, right?
Yep.
And it's at 215.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do the math on 17 to 215 over 10 years. I'm going to gather it's better than the S&P 500.
Yeah.
That was a tongue-in-cheek joke right there to the extent that don't ever compare one stock to the S&P 500. It's It's one of the dumbest ideas you can do in your life. My point is that you want to own a series of great businesses. I often say our greatest clients are business owners, because business owners understand volatility. They understand contraction and expansion of economies. They understand contraction and expansion of the businesses that they're in. There's always good times and bad times. I always use the analogy of your house, right? In 2008, while everyone was selling their stocks, how many people were selling their houses?
Yeah. Great question.
Not very many.
You've got it.
Why do they think that? Because they're long-term investors in the house that they own. People view stocks not long-term. People view other assets as long-term. They don't worry as much about it. How about we take some time to understand that owning stocks is owning a business, and business owners own businesses long-term. And then when the economy gets bad, how about we just look at the idea of more buying more of that great business when it's on sale?
Mark, I love this
before progress.
I love it. And I tell you what, I love what you did is because I brought up the PF Chang's because I was hoping you would pivot to airlines. And I want to just, we talk about restaurants, airlines, but the conviction, but then the consistency, and that's, and you led to that. It would be a rarity that we would own one or those other type of businesses just because of your feelings and how they're operated, right? And it's a trade, right?
Right. So, and it doesn't say that some of these airlines are not good businesses.
Exactly. Either. Certainly.
Okay. But, I got to jump in here. Hold on. I've been quiet too long here because there's a couple of things here I've got to challenge you on. All right.
You're going to do that again to me?
I am. I really am. I'm not one yet, but one of these days I'm coming up to the plate again. Right. So what happens when you're wrong?
About what?
You have, by your own admission, my friend, said that, you know what, this wasn't the right part to the car. And so we remove that part and we put a different part in because you make adjustments. We've talked about that before. They can check the disclosure. Right. Okay. But I want you to just kind of, because Chuck just challenged you on the consistency component and you are a fiercely convicted person. How do you maintain that level of objectivity and consistency when you have to make adjustments?
That's an easy answer. The four sell disciplines.
Yes.
Number one, the long-term fundamentals have changed. I don't ask questions. I don't think twice. I sell the position at a loss and I move on. That's why we diversify. That's why we asset allocate. No one company is going to break the long-term performance of the portfolio. So our four sell disciplines are long-term fundamentals have changed. Sell discipline number two, during periods like we're in right now, where we're in a corrective phase of, and I'm not going to say the markets, I'm going to say that the valuations of businesses are shrinking right now. Let me say that again, because Matt, that's a critical piece to this. The industry and the markets talk about we're in a stock market correction. All S&P sectors are down. All of these companies in this sector are down. That's, you can call it a correction. But what is actually happening, not by opinion, but literally what is happening is that buyers of those so-called businesses are saying, I'm not going to pay that valuation for that company anymore.
Exactly.
The valuation of that business is going down and I am not going to pay that high valuation anymore. It doesn't matter what the reason is. I'm going to wait and pay a lower valuation for that business. So in our four sell disciplines, long-term fundamentals can change. Number two, during corrections, all of the companies may be losing their valuation. In other words, their valuations may be coming down. When all of that happens as a sector as a whole, when I have flexibility and clarity and transparency, I can now say, okay, everybody's come down. Now's my chance to buy the best of the best. And I want to buy the best of the best. And I'll sell this company at a loss in the same sector, but I'm going to buy this other company because they're a better company when they come out of this valuation metrics. Sell discipline number three doesn't pertain to corrections, but it's important anyway. And it doesn't mean you're wrong. Sell discipline number three says, there's nothing wrong with taking profit. If I have a company I own and it's now weighing my portfolio allocation off, I am going to say, you know what? I'm probably going to take that off the table. I'm gonna take that off the table and I'm gonna move on. Fourth, tax loss harvesting. I'm gonna sell a company that maybe is down right now. I still like it. I'm losing on it, but I'm gonna take the tax loss harvest against future gains of another company and buy another company in the same sector. So wrong is a relative term. Have I sold stocks at a loss? Yes, but I've done it for one of those reasons.
Okay, dude, Matt, I'm telling you right now, I am dedicated to stumping you. It's been 3 years, dude. One of these days, you're going to be like, you know what, Matt, I don't have a good answer to that. And I'm going to have to get back to not only you, but the audience. But again, so you know what? See, well, this is why I don't play baseball, dude. So, because well,
this is why it's the process before progress. If you have a process that's tested over time, it's going to be hard to stump me.
Yeah,
it really will.
I'm going to keep trying, brother.
It's a challenge for you. Good, bring it on. I'm going. I love it.
All right, Chuck. What are we going to do as we wrap up today?
Yeah, I got one more thing for Mark that I want because I love what he just said. And Matt, you asked the question with conviction yourself, so here it is, Mark. You mentioned the word flexibility. I was going to ask about this, so I'm going to. This is a saying we have internally, and I just want you to drive this home as we finish this up. So the structure, all right, the SMA structure, you can't do this in a mutual fund or an ETF, but the structure drives the flexibility, which drives the process, your ability to have conviction in a company, be consistent, which drives the progress. Structure drives flexibility, which drives process, which drives progress. Would you talk a little bit about how your flexibility, the mere fact that you have complete control over your decision-making process, allows you to unearth companies and meet the goals of our investors?
Okay. First of all, at Nepsis, we don't have any walls of what we can or cannot do.
Exactly.
We have a simple mantra about investing. We are investors in businesses long-term, which means we can buy whatever business we want to own if we believe in the long-term fundamentals of that business we want to own. We want to own 25 to 35 companies in our portfolio because that is, statistically speaking, an appropriately, notice I'm saying not diversified, but an appropriately asset allocated portfolio,
yeah.
Okay? So we can afford to be picky. We can afford to be patient. We can afford to pick the best of the best of the businesses we want to own. But like the automobile reference, every business in the portfolio is owned for a very specific reason. And what most investors don't realize is that the variables of a marketplace, the variables of a company, the variables of an economy, the variables of black swan events.
Yeah.
I love how everybody has the addiction to prediction and wants to tell you what they think is going to happen in any given year in a portfolio. Guess what? Nobody knows. Everybody's just telling you that because they want to prognosticate, postulate, and speculate. We're not in the business of prognosticating, postulating, and speculating. We are in the business of executing a process that over time has been time tested based on the fundamentals of our philosophy, our strategy, flexibility, and transparency.
Superb. What did you think of that, Matt?
I'm still sore that I didn't get him again, to be honest.
You're not going to. I don't
know. No, it was great.
But you try. I love that. You try.
I'm always going to keep trying, man. That's why I get paid the big bucks. All right. So here's the thing, everybody. All of the different key points that Chuck and Mark talked about today, I know that you have been at dinner parties and you've heard people say this tripe, right? These played out talking points that they're basically parroting what they're hearing on the news, which is misinformation and not the appropriate way to have appropriate asset allocation. True. In the way that you're going to invest your money. So it is your responsibility as a good friend of theirs to have them listen to the show. And it's really easy to do that. All you have to do is share that. There's a quick button. You can do that. Have them go to the Invest with Clarity website, go through all of the different fun stuff that's on there, all of the content. There's a stress test thing there. There's all that stuff, right? I mean, you guys still have all that super awesome stuff on the website, don't you?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
And they need to go there. They need to experience what actual clarity would mean. Could you imagine, everybody, if you woke up tomorrow and weren't worried because you actually knew the process?
Well, especially during these days when even
your
quote-unquote conservative investors are losing tons of money they thought they were safe in bonds.
Got it.
That's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, we should probably attack that at some point on a later episode. Are we going to talk about that next time?
Yeah.
I think that'd be really neat because it's kind of a hot topic right now. If you guys have, I know you guys noticed, but it's good for the listeners to understand that we have our fingers on the pulse of what's going on. All right, everybody. So like, share, comment. We'd love all of those things. Go to the website and make sure that you're sharing this so that your friends can truly invest with clarity. For Mark and Chuck, this is Matt Halloran, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Nepsis, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor.